We're starting chapter 26 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, called The Second Task. "You said you'd already worked out that egg clue," said Hermione indignantly. "Keep your voice down," said Harry crossly. "I just need to sort of fine-tune it, all right?" He, Ron, and Hermione were sitting at the back of the charms class with a table to themselves. They were supposed to be practicing the opposite of the summoning charm today, the banishing charm. Owing to the potential for nasty accidents when objects kept flying across the room, Professor Flitwick had given each student a stack of cushions on which to practice, the theory being that these wouldn't hurt anyone if they went off target. It was a good theory, but it wasn't working very well. Neville's aim was so poor that he kept accidentally sending much heavier things flying across the room. Professor Flitwick, for instance.
"Oh my god.
Just forget the egg for a minute, all right?" Harry hissed as Professor Flitwick went whizzing resignedly past them, landing on top of a large cabinet. "I'm trying to tell you about Snape and Moody." The class was an ideal cover for private conversation, as everyone was having far too much fun to pay any attention. Harry had been recalling his adventures for the previous night in whispered installments for the last half hour. "Snape said Moody searched his office as well," Ron whispered, his eyes alight with interest as he banished a cushion with a sweep of his wand. It soared off into the air and knocked Parvati's hat off. Poor Parvati.
I know.
They're so mean to her.
Well, she's got Boba Tong, guys, so it's good.
Yeah, she does. Plural, guys.
Plural.
"What, do you reckon Moody's here to keep an eye on Snape as well as Karkaroff?" "Well, I don't know if that's what Dumbledore asked him to do, but he's definitely doing it," said Harry, waving his wand without paying much attention, so that his cushion did an odd sort of belly flop on the desk. "Moody said Dumbledore only lets Snape stay here because he's giving him a second chance or something." "What?" Ron said, his eyes widening, his next cushion spinning high into the air, ricocheting off the chandelier, dropping heavily onto Flitwick's desk. "Harry, maybe Moody thinks Snape put your name in the Goblet of Fire." "Oh, Ron," said Hermione, shaking her head desperately. "We thought Snape was trying to kill Harry before, and it turned out he was saving Harry's life, remember?" They should remember that more often.
I know.
She banished a cushion, and it flew across the room and landed in the box they were all supposed to be aiming at. Harry looked at Hermione, thinking. It was true that Snape had saved his life once, but the odd thing was, Snape definitely loathed him, just as he'd loathed Harry's father when they had been in school together. Snape loved taking points from Harry, and he certainly never missed an opportunity to give him punishments, or even to suggest that he should be suspended from the school. It's kind of because he should be suspended.
I don't think he should be suspended.
Maybe not suspended. He should stop being such an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
"I don't care what Moody says," Hermione went on. "Dumbledore's not stupid. He was right to trust Hagrid and Professor Lupin, and even the loads of people wouldn't have given them jobs. So why shouldn't he be right about Snape, even if Snape is a bit..." "Evil," said Ron promptly. "Come on, Hermione. Where are those dark wizard catchers searching his office, then?" "Why has Mr. Crouch been pretending to be ill?" said Hermione, ignoring Ron. "It's a bit funny, isn't it, so that he can't manage to come to the Yule Ball, but he can get up here in the middle of the night when he wants to?"
"Mm-hmm."
"You just don't like Crouch because of that elf, Winky," said Ron, sending a cushion soaring into the window. "You just want to think Snape's up to something," said Hermione, sending her cushion zooming neatly into the box. "I just want to know what Snape did with his first chance if he's on the second one," said Harry grimly. His cushion, to his very great surprise, flew straight across the room, and landed neatly on top of Hermione's. More?
Yeah.
Okay. Obedient to Sirius's wish of hearing anything odd at Hogwarts, Harry sent him a letter by Brown Owl that night, explaining all about Mr. Crouch breaking into Snape's office, and Moody and Snape's conversation. Then Harry turned his attention in earnest to the most urgent problem facing him, how to survive underwater for an hour, on the 24th of February. Harry quite liked the idea of using a summoning charm again. Ron had quite liked the idea of using a summoning charm again. Harry had explained about aqua lungs, and Ron couldn't see why Harry shouldn't summon one from the nearest muggle town. Hermione squashed this by pointing out that in the unlikely event that Harry had learned how to operate an aqualung within the set limit of an hour, he was sure to be disqualified for breaking an international code of wizarding society. It was too much to hope that no muggles would spot an aqualung zooming across the countryside to Hogwarts. Of course, the ideal solution would be to transfigure yourself into a submarine or something, Hermione said. If only we'd done human transfiguration already. But I don't think we start that until sixth year. It can go badly wrong if you don't know what you're doing. Yeah, I don't fancy myself walking around with a periscope sticking out of my head, said Harry. I suppose I could always attack someone in front of Moody. He might do it for me. I don't think he'd let you choose what you wanted to be turned into, though, said Hermione seriously. No, I think your best chance is some sort of charm. So Harry, I think he would soon have had enough of the library to last him a lifetime. He's so lazy. Buried himself once more among the dusty volumes, looking for any spell that might enable a human to survive without oxygen. However, though he, Ron, and Hermione searched throughout their lunchtimes, evenings, and whole weekends, and though Harry asked Professor McGonagall for a note of permission to use the restricted section, and even asked the irritable, vulture-like librarian, Madame Pince, for help, they found nothing whatsoever that would enable Harry to spend an hour underwater and live to tell the tale. Familiar flutterings of panic were starting to disturb Harry now, and he was finding it difficult to concentrate in class again. The lake, which Harry had always taken for granted as another feature of the grounds, drew his eyes whenever he was near a classroom window, a great iron gray mass of chilly water, whose dark and icy depths were starting to seem as distant as the moon. Just as it had before he faced the Horntail, time was slipping away as though somebody had bewitched the clocks to go extra fast. Well, maybe he could have started a little sooner. There was still a week to go before February the 24th. There was still time. There were 5 days to go. He was bound to find something soon. 3 days to go. Please let me find something, please. With 2 days left, Harry started to go off food again. The only good thing about breakfast on Monday was the return of the brown owl he had sent to Sirius. He pulled off the parchment, unrolled it, and saw the shortest letter Sirius had ever written to him. Send date of the next Hogsmeade weekend by return owl. Harry turned the parchment over and looked at the back, hoping to see something else, but it was blank. Weekend after next, whispered Hermione, who had read the note over Harry's shoulder. Here, take my quill and send the owl back straight away. Harry scribbled the dates down on the back of Sirius's letter, tied it onto the brown owl's leg, and watched it take flight again. What had he expected? Advice on how to survive underwater? He had been so intent on telling Sirius about Snape and Moody, he had completely forgotten to mention the egg's clue. What did he want to know about the next Hogsmeade weekend for? Said Ron. Man, is Ron dumb?
Do you really need to ask, baby?
Don't know, said Harry Dully. Was Harry dumb, too?
Yep.
The momentary happiness that had flared inside him at the sight of the owl had died. Come on, care of magical creatures. Whether Hagrid was trying to make up for the blast-ended Scroots, or because there were only 2 Scroots left now, or because he was trying to prove that he could do anything that Professor Grubby Plank did, Harry didn't know, but Hagrid had been continuing her lessons on unicorns ever since he'd returned to work. It turned out that Hagrid knew quite a bit about unicorns as he did on monsters, though it was clear that he found their lack of poisonous fangs disappointing. Mm-hmm. Today he had managed to capture 2 unicorn foals.
Oh, oh, so cute!
Unlike full-grown unicorns, they were pure gold.
Oh my gosh.
Parvati and Lavender went into transports of delight at the sight of them, and even Pansy Parkinson had to work to conceal how much she liked them.
But they're so cute. Ah! died. Look at their fluffy unicorn babies.
I know.
They're so cute, I'm gonna die.
Easier to spot than the adults, Hagrid told the class. They turn silver when they're about 2 years old, and they grow horns at about 4. Don't go pure white until they're full grown, around about 7. They're a bit more trusting when they're babies. Don't mind boys so much. Can move a bit. You can pat them if you want. Give them a few lumps of these sugar. You okay, Harry? Hagrid muttered, moving slightly aside, while most of the others swarmed around the baby unicorns. Yeah, said Harry. Just nervous, eh? Said Hagrid. Bit. Harry, said Hagrid, clasping a massive hand on his shoulder, so that Harry's knees buckled under its weight. I'd have been worried about you before I saw you taking on that horn tail, but now I know you're going to do anything you get your mind for. I'm not worried about you at all. You're going to do fine. Got your clue worked out, have you? Harry nodded, but even as he did so, an insane urge to confess that he hadn't any idea how to survive at the bottom of the lake for an hour came over him. He looked up at Hagrid. Perhaps he had to go into the lake sometimes to deal with creatures in it. He looked after everything else on the grounds, after all. You're going to win, Hagrid growled, patting Harry's shoulder again so that Harry actually felt himself sink a couple inches into the soft ground. I know it. I can feel it. You're going to win, Harry. Harry just couldn't bring himself to wipe the happy, confident smile off Hagrid's face. Pretending he was interested in the young unicorns. How can you not be interested in young unicorns?
I know. Oh my god, they're the best things in the world.
He forced a smile in return.
I would steal one of the unicorns. I am not lying. Unicorn.
Just like that woman that took the puppies.
Yes.
I got 6 in the back.
I know. 9's a bit much. It's just a lot of energy. Oh, I want what I want and want one. Oh my god, puppies are dying.
Anyways, so pretending he was interested in the young unicorns, he forced a smile in return and moved forward to pat them with the others. Maybe we should stop. That's okay. The end of it. Section. Okay. Thank you, kitty. I love you very much. You're very, very cute. And we'll finish the chapter tonight. Assuming you get back from your party at a reasonable time. I love you so much, kitty. Let's sleep on kitty.